now approaching. Junction at platform. Passengers, airport, please stay on board. Next stop, road station.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
But yes, I am like Zola Budd, Sandy Shaw, and the singer Ray, going to do this podcast barefoot. So Ray went up on stage at the Brits barefoot every time, and her publicity pictures, she's just wearing a pair of hotel slippers. You know, those great big...
Oh, that was at the end of the night, though,
white,
wasn't it?
Fluffy barges. Yeah. No, she didn't have shoes on at all.
Or didn't she? She did have very expensive ones with her, apparently.
Well, I mean, who wants to wear those?
Yeah. So. I've got great news for Ray, which is that I've properly listened to her track Escapism.
Yeah.
And now I really like it.
Oh, the whole
so,
album's
well
super.
Done, Ray. All your troubles are over. I've got into you.
Okay. I asked you to listen to that months ago.
Yeah, I know. Well, so did, yes, I was under a lot of pressure. To be honest, I not just from you, to listen to Ray. Just, it's my dad's name, so I was just thinking, oh, God, I know she spells it with an E on the end. Just seems faintly ridiculous.
Well, call her Rachel Keane, because that's her proper
that's her
name.
Proper name, yeah. Well, congratulations to her. You've got a new fan. That's your week completely made. Now, where do you stand as an aficionado of the Hampshire region on the idea of a statue of Jane Austen at Winchester Cathedral? Because people are getting quite angry. I don't know why. It'd be a lovely thing.
Why
it?
Are people getting angry?
There's one woman, she's the vice chair of the Jane Austen Society. She felt it would be an inappropriate place because the inner close at the cathedral had been, I'm trying to get this right, a private space for the monks.
Yeah. It's also
who knows what went on there?
Where me and Debbie and Susie, we used to smoke our cigarettes and drink our bottle of Cinzano on a Friday night, Jane. So it's got happy memories for me. It doesn't say that, does it?
No, it doesn't.
In the Hampshire Chronicle.
It doesn't mention that. This is from The Times.
The Times.
I'm on message here. I'm reading from The Times.
Well, I think Jane Austen is one of Hampshire's finest sisters, so I don't understand why anybody would object to a statue. You know, I recognise the immense value and beauty in her writing, but it always frustrated me that we had to read a lot of Jane Austen because, you know, the message that it all comes good because Mr. Wright hove's into view, I find depressing, actually.
It is a bit, but then in her day, women without a man, it wasn't so much as, you know, what is it they said? Woman without a man is like a fish without a bicycle. That's what the feminists said.
Yeah.
But back in her day, you actually did need one. Or you couldn't
really live. But what seemed to be rather absurd was when we were being taught Jane Austen.
Oh, yeah, and that wasn't really...
That we weren't being asked to challenge that at all.
No.
Or to, you know, really cast our minds back to
a
time
back where that was... To be honest, back in the 70s, it was still pretty much the same.
Yeah.
When was it women could get mortgages?
1967.
I think it might be 70 something.
I think 67 was when you didn't need to ask your husband's permission.
We were wallowing in the troughs of ignorance yesterday. So let's ask Eve, when could women get a mortgage without a man? You'll have to Google it, Eve.
Yeah. Maybe 67, was that the chequebook? You're allowed to write your own checks without your husband's signature.
I think 67 is the Abortion Act. Oh, God. Okay, let's check this.
Anyway, look, it's a long time ago. I think, why not have a statue of Jane Austen somewhere? I mean, I think, couldn't we basically just say that any woman who's made an immense mark on culture or politics or news should be celebrated in statue form?
Yeah.
Because all of the other ones in the close at Winchester, whoever they were blokes.
So look, there should be one with you, your little bottle of Cinzano as well. That would be nice. Yes, Eve has news.
Yes.
Discrimination Act was passed in 1975.
1975.
Bloody hell. Yeah. Right.
That is something, isn't
so
it?
So no wonder Jane Austen was hanging on in the hope of a fella Hoven interview, because without one, she couldn't get a mortgage. Yeah.
But also, please don't write into the podcast and, you know, say Jane Austen's marvellous, because I do understand that, but it was just, it was more the message. It's not the way that she writes. I think the way she writes is absolutely brilliant, and her observations about, you know, the manners and etiquette and pomp of the drawing room are absolutely superb. But Mr. Darcy as well, I think, is a creation that, you know, the older you get as a woman, the more you find just really irritating. You know, a man who's not in charge of his emotions but just has a very healthy bank balance and looks fit is not necessarily... That's not necessarily the man for you or your daughters.
No, this is true. Although he did look good in that clinging wet shirt. But that isn't in the book, as we all know.
No.
Hello to Alice, who says, I just wanted to say thank you for keeping me company. I'm on maternity leave with my first baby. Whilst I love being a mother and adore my beautiful baby boy, Rory, hello Rory, nobody had warned me how lonely maternity leave can be at times with a three-month-old for company, and how much I would miss the daily conversations I had at work with my colleagues. Your natterings are filling this void, or helping to fill it anyway, and you have me laughing along at home, or whilst I'm on yet another walk trying to get the baby to sleep. As the first of my friends to have a baby, I do often feel like I've got nobody to talk things through with. It helps. She mentions the small matter of birth itself, motherhood, and episiotomies. And there's plenty more on episiotomies.
Yeah.
Both today and actually tomorrow in the email special as well. Alice, welcome along. Really glad you're there. And I'm glad we're helping a little bit. And congratulations to you as well.
And also, I would say, you know, Jane and I both really sympathise and empathise with that feeling of bewilderment in the early days of motherhood, because nothing in your life will have prepared you for that, actually. I think it's one of those things that is very different from the image that may have been conveyed to you. And so just, you know, treat us as the real life voices in your head, and just keep in touch. Keep us posted. A little bit of information from your daily walk, we don't mind receiving that at all.
No, I do remember that. It was particularly, we had a kind of demonic hour between about 5 and, it wasn't an hour, it was longer. 5 o'clock appeared to be a really
was
awful
it the wailing
for
hour?
Colic and colicky wait, just screeching. And I was often round and about the park, taking a turn, a little bit like Jane Austen, taking a turn around the park at about 5 p.m. on a spring afternoon. And yes, unforgettable times. So, Alice, the good news is it gets loads, loads easier in so many ways. It does, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. And also, your episiotomy will get easier in so many ways too.
That's true too. And you can also, when your friends do eventually have babies, if they do, of course many may choose not to, you can be really patronising because you've been there and you've done it. So that's great. Right.
Or you could be helpful.
Or you could be helpful, but be more like me and just be patronising. Right.
This is, we've just got such a bumper edition of ones about birth. Are we going to save the very serious ones for tomorrow, which would just allow me to read a couple about fab lollies?
do that. But I am astonished by some of the great quotes we've got from medical professionals when...
Oh, my word.
Unbelievable things that were said to women. And indeed, referencing husbands.
Yes.
So, John,
can you find that one about the I think isn't it a terrible euphemism in France that there is something called a husband stitch?
Yeah. Well, yes. Here's one. Yes, there is. Oh, it really is. This is from Ali. Back in 1988, when I produced my first baby, 9 pounds, I tore badly, resulting in months of pain and deep depression. And none of that is funny. It must have been absolutely awful. Three men's words have stayed with me all these years. The junior doctor who attended me, bleary-eyed, at 4:30 a.m, when I'd been waiting for half an hour with my feet in stirrups. Blimey, I don't know where to start with this one. Then there was my GP, when I consulted him a few months later regarding the shambles of my undercarriage, which was making sex impossible. Well, we better sort that out. Don't want hubby playing away from home, do we? And about this, the consultant gynaecologist to whom I was referred to for repair. Not too much damage, nothing a couple of stiff sherries at bedtime couldn't fix. God.
Yeah. We'll just let that sink in into the void.
And they wonder why feminism was invented.
Yeah. But I'd be very interested to hear if men who've gone to see their GPs about erectile dysfunction have been met with similar kind of dismissive, funny things being said about their wives playing away or
That's
whatever it is. Or, you know, if perhaps, I don't really... This is not a phrase I've really fallen there.
Go on.
In my head, but I don't know whether there's a kind of diminishing return just in terms of size with the male penis later on in life. But again, I wonder whether or not the medical profession has greeted that with the same kind of surly, nasty language.
Or just a rather brisk, jolly approach. And as you say, a cheeky reference to the idea that the missus might be getting a little bit frustrated.
Be happy with that.
Looking at the window cleaner. Which reminds me, they're coming tomorrow.
Are they?
Yes, all of them.
Do you find that... Do you have a troop? Okay. Have you never cleaned your windows yourself?
No.
Do you find that paying for a window cleaner is one of those things where they are absolutely entitled to earn that money, but every time you pay, just think, how much?
Slightly, but I couldn't like my window cleaner more.
Ooh.
No, he's just a really nice bloke.
I think that's the start of a novel, kids.
I couldn't like it. Never mind Jane Austen. I couldn't like my window cleaner more. Right. On you go.
Okay, this one comes from Alison, who says, thank you for your articulate reading of the email about fab lollies. It's well and truly put me off all stick-based ice creams and ice lollies. I anticipate a significant change in calories consumed since mini magnums are to me what cheese is to Jane. Alison, and then you've put PS, but there's no PS. What was the PS? So, Alison,
that's mainstream media. Get involved.
Get back in touch, please. Otherwise, we'll think there's a conspiracy.
There is a conspiracy there. That PS has been kept from us. Just a brief mention to the incident I had at the weekend on that football fan packed train from Liverpool to London. Marie says, your journey struck a chord. I totally understand that feeling of nervousness that something's about to kick off. For the last 50 odd years, I've been travelling back to Newcastle from either London or Norfolk to visit family, and I've witnessed some pretty bad behaviour, and not always from blokes. As I don't drive, it has always been by train. In the late 70s, it was still separate carriages with the sliding doors, and at the age of 19, I spent a rather uncomfortable few hours stuck in one of these with a load of pissed up squaddies heading back to Catterick. From memory, I think it was more light-hearted than threatening. Now, I just wouldn't dream of booking an evening train, always a morning one, although you then run the risk of the because I'm worth it crowd of ladies heading off to the races. The first 10 minutes of the journey is spent assembling the plastic flutes, the next 10 opening the bubbly, and the next unpacking the comestibles from M&S while singing Mr. Blue Sky. Having said that, it's a brilliant snapshot of modern day life, keeping it real. Thank you, Marie. She says, PS, she's got a PS, and it's been included.
Yeah.
So the mainstream media didn't get involved here. Marie says, Till the Stars Come Down. That was the play I saw at the National Theatre last week. And I'm sorry I didn't get the name right yesterday because it's brilliant. It's really good. It's by Beth Steele. Check it out if you can. It's on for another couple of weeks. Till the Stars Come Down is the best play. And my friend Mark Wooten, Mr. Poppy in Nativity, plays that Polish bloke. Totally agree. He's brilliant. Mind you, his mother in real life is Polish. That would help, which is why I think his accent was so convincing.
Now, how much is a theatre ticket in London? Because I heard this being discussed on this very station. And as you know, I don't really go to the West End very much at all. And haven't gone recently, but they were suggesting that the average night out, you know, the tickets in the West End are now £100.
Well, this was the National Theatre and it was £45.
£45.
It's not cheap. But having said that, your musicals are a good £80, £90 and above. That's absolutely right.
So how can anybody afford
Well, they can't.
To do
you can't
that?
Take a family. I mean, it's unthinkable. It really is. If you've got four of you and it's a big hit show that you want to see. You're looking at an outlay of potentially £450.
Yeah.
If you're going to include, and if you include travel, then a lot more, obviously.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the National, and there are cheaper tickets for students and OAPs and things. And of course, soon I'll qualify for the cheaper tickets.
So when do you qualify as an OAP? You get your Freedom Pass at 60 in London town.
Yes. Yes,
but,
I do.
But when do you start getting of the discounts?
Well, I'm going to go for all of them as soon as possible.
But when are they?
That's a good point. I don't. Maybe I don't know whether they clock in.
Because does it move with the state pension?
It might just be when your state
age.
Pension comes in.
That's really unfair.
So it'd be 15 years away for you, and another decade at least for me. I should say my mum is 90 today. Happy birthday! She won't be listening, right? But I've mentioned it,
okay.
So that I feel better for getting it out of my system.
Well,
a big
done.
Party was at the weekend, so yeah. Anyway,
I've got to do this other birth one because it just made me laugh. It's from Diana, who says, "I think without irony, best wishes from down under." In New Zealand. The recent correspondence about birth injuries brought something back. She was 10 pounds 11 ounces and a speedy arrival. The doctor in his white gumboots proudly announced the biggest he'd ever delivered and with glee went to retrieve the placenta to see how heavy that was. I was past caring. Now, he said to my husband as he prepared to stitch me up, how tight would you like her to be?
Right. God.
I know, it's too much. It's too much, it's too much. And this comes in from Sophie, who says, those Austrian dresses are dirndls. I wanted to share a funny translation of something my German friend says is a slightly bitchy saying for the bustiness you described, which is, she puts all the wood in front of the hut.
Yes.
All those Germans, they're funny, aren't they?
Yes, they are. Now, the controversy yesterday about what you do with those packets of peas, you with your poor toe.
Oh, yeah.
So have you got any of those?
Because yes.
This is quite an important health and safety message.
Well, Carla, who's a counsellor, so she must know her stuff, she says, with four children, the poorly peas were regularly called for and always returned to the freezer. I'd like to report that we definitely did eat them. Nothing bad happened. We're all alive and well.
Well, I thought there was a rule against it. Anyway, Liz says, Jane and Fee, you just keep a special bag of peas in the freezer and you mark them peas for knees. Recently, my poor husband had gout in his big toe. The sleeves for cooling wine bottles fit over a foot. A treat.
That is a top tip.
Can I just say, that's very Times, that is. Thank you. It mentions gout and it mentions those coolers for wine bottles. Very impressive, Liz. A lovely tip and we'll pass it on.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely magnificent.
Yeah. Epic. Who's our big guest?
Our big guest today is Ruby Wax.
Yes.
Comedian, writer, all-round heroine, and I think a woman who has battled with some serious shit in her lifetime and has been generous enough to share it with people, actually, in a really helpful way. I think her stuff about mental health is just superb. And, you know, she's a clever woman as well. So when she talks about mindfulness, I'm minded to listen, actually. Mm. And sometimes when it's just a bit more, you know, wellness fluff, I'm not anymore, because I sometimes think there's too... You can be encouraged to think that there's a wellness episode around every corner, and there can't be in life. And, you know, perhaps we're making our lives a little bit more difficult by expecting there to be that. But I think she's brilliant, so she's our guest in a couple of moments.
OK. Well, we'll move on to her. I'm actually amazed that so many people are as old as me and remember Tinker and Tucker. This is from Adele. Anti-Jean is a silly old bean. Does that ring a bell, Jane? The other characters in Tinker and Tucker were Katie Kookaburra, Willy Wombat, Kiki Kangaroo, and who can forget the Wibbly Wobbly Way? To this day, I can hear the theme song with words playing in my 66-year-old head. It's funny what chooses to stick in our lifetime memory. I mean, that is so true. Why is it? And I was also sent, by the way, some Tinker and Tucker badges and other memorabilia, which just, I had a Tinker and Tucker badge. I even had a boomerang. What I was doing with it in suburban Merseyside, I don't know.
Probably breaking some windows.
Probably breaking some windows. But sometimes you just think, God, I've been alive a long time. And I was going to...
Sorry, very nearly swore there.
No, because I looked up what happened, because my mum was born on March the 5th, 1934.
Imagine what she's going to be like when she's 90.
Well, exactly.
I wanted to put something
cheery in her birthday card about, you know, on the day you were born, this happened. But what the only thing that comes up is something so depressing that I just won't even mention it now. And you just think, oh. And then you actually think, wow, you know, she has lived through an incredible period in human history.
Yeah.
I mean, she obviously doesn't spend a great deal of time pondering that, but it is truly remarkable. I mean, you could even say that we have as well, of course. Things just stubbornly keep happening, don't they?
They do keep happening, and you know, we would be a wiser breed, wouldn't we, if we did keep reminding ourselves that things keep happening?
Yeah.
Because the idea at the moment that, you know, we might be on the brink of a world war. I know that people listen to this for the frippery, but let's just be serious with just one sec. No, you know, you can sometimes hear the kind of guffaw after that of, you know, don't be ridiculous. Or people are talking about it in a kind of intellectual way. And you think, no, you know, wars keep happening because we aren't standing back and going, you know, let's take notice of what stops them from happening. And actually, Ruby and I talk about this in the interview, about the cult of the strong man who is clearly mad. Yeah. What, you know, why would you get up in the morning and want to dominate the world and create so much grief for people unless you were absolutely bonkers?
Completely unhinged.
Carol has brought Plutarch into proceedings, though. Yes. So should we head to Plutarch?
Let's.
You were wondering on today's show whether women were allowed to bathe in public baths in ancient Rome. And the answer is yes. Some had special times of the day for women, and in Pompeii, the public baths had sections exclusively for women, separate from the larger bathing and exercise areas for men. However, Plutarch warned about sharing a bath with a woman. Men should not cleanse
Why?
Their skin in the women's bath. Men must not be naked together with women. In addition to the indecency, certain effluvia issue from women's bodies and excrete, which are defiling when absorbed by men. It's not the other way around, is it? Anyone who enters the same air or water partakes of them. And as Carol says, misogynist or what?
Effluvia.
Effluvia.
I was going to call my eldest effluvia.
Meet my daughter effluvia and my son algorithm. I love the podcast and listen every afternoon in the car as I drive from the school where I teach Latin 20 miles north of New York City into Manhattan, where I live. Valete. Goodbye. Hello. Goodbye. Off we go. Says Carol. That's an exciting journey, isn't it?
That really is. Thank you, Carol. I wonder if in American schools they use the same textbooks as we had. Is it, you know, the one set in Pompeii? Did you have those?
Oh, gosh, yes. What was that called?
Caecilius.
Yes, it was. And he was. You were always learning about him heading off, weren't you, to the baths.
But you always knew it was only ever going to end one way for that family. Because they didn't survive the eruption.
No.
And it was all a bit, it was a bit dystopian in its own way, wasn't it? Why couldn't they have picked another town? You see?
I guess, but
even then we were lumped with misery everywhere.
But don't you think that learning about the Romans was some of the best history?
Oh, yeah, God. I mean, the baths in
school.
In
or,
Bath.
Or, yeah, any time. They were just so fantastically. I don't know, it was all a bit sexy, wasn't it, the Roman era, by comparison to. I remember going to Butser. That was one of our special trips to see an Iron Age settlement. It just wasn't quite the same as Bath.
No, I mean, that's what I was. That's why Stonehenge just makes me laugh. Because, you know, they say we don't need immigration. Well, look at what we were coming up with.
Anyway, right,
yes.
Anyway, look, Plutarch, well, he can go and do one ahead of International Women's Day. He can go and sit in a bath by himself.
Yes, you smelly old wretch. When did he die? Can you Google that, please? When did Plutarch meet his... I hope it was a very sticky end.
Are there any descendants of Plutarch listening? I'd like to apologise to my learned
on
sister.
On behalf of News UK, we'd like to apologise.
To Plutarch.
Do we have Plutarch's dates?
After AD 119.
AD 119.
Sometime after. Not very specific. Okay. Well, so he could well have relatives around. Right.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time.
That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So shall we get to the interview with Ruby Wax? Eve is nodding effusively there. So
get on with it, is what she really wants to say.
Ruby Wax is about to go on tour with her show, I'm Not As Well As I Thought I Was, which is based on one of her best-selling memoirs of the same name. It was a book about her search for calm in her head as a sufferer of severe depression, which has surfaced several times in her adult life. Now, she's been a writer and performer for 3 decades now, and one of her early interview shows included a run-in with Donald Trump on his private jet back in the year 2000. We'll talk about that in a few minutes' time, but we started by discussing the elements of the stage show coming to a theatre near you.
Well, I take you on a kind of roller coaster journey, which is the premise is during COVID, nobody was calling me. And my character, whoever I am, because it's a theatrical event, I'm not doing stand-up, is that nobody was paying any attention to me. And somebody in show business, we just live in the reflection of other people's eyes. And so I decided I would change my life and I would find something that had more meaning. And that was the idea. So I signed up for the most extreme journeys that I could think of that might change the paradigm of how I was living. So I went on a 30-day silent retreat, tried to get people out of Afghanistan, lived in a Christian monastery, went swimming with humpbacks, just things that would snap me out of the way I was living, you know, bring me into chapter two.
There's so much to unpack just in chapter one. It's just so fantastic. The idea of the 30-day silent retreat, if it's true that a problem shared is a problem halved, doesn't it that mean that if you can't talk about everything with other people, then you're problems actually become worse and more internalized?
Well, you're talking about somebody who studied mindfulness. You certainly couldn't go on a 30-day retreat if you'd never done it before. And the point of mindfulness, and it's a terrible word, they should really change it as soon as possible, is you're replacing the therapist. It's exercises for the brain, the way a sit-up is for the body, which means that, yes, it's hell about for 5 days because you're just listening to your inner devil, you know, getting the worst reviews known to man. And gradually, it's like you're arm wrestling with that inner demon. And eventually, if there's no distractions and nobody to call and nothing to read, it starts to give up. Now, your thoughts aren't going to stop, but they get quiet. And eventually, you can start to notice things like what you're eating. And it becomes quite pleasurable. I mean, that I know from studying at Oxford, and I knew there was something to mindfulness. But 30 days, again, they won't let a novice on, but it's sort of the mental equivalent of doing Iron Man.
Okay.
So it did what it was supposed to do, which is give you a little bit of peace. And also, it gives you insight. You're not blocking out how you think. You're seeing clearly how you think. You're learning about things, but without giving yourself the second layer, you know, beating yourself up like, I just need attention all the time. What an idiot that I need it. You just see clearly. And you can't change your habits unless you see that, you know thyself.
And what about some of the other things that you tried?
Okay. I mean, the whole point of the 30-day retreat is there's things that happened that were hilarious. Especially I got into the turkeys in a big way because you're so desperate to follow some drama. There were turkeys on the property, played a big part in my life. And I started to fantasize that the guy next to me was in love with me and that I'd look away every time in my mind he looked at me. And at the end of 30 days, I said, did you happen to notice that I was sitting next to you? And he said, no, but I heard snoring. So you come to the realization that in life, you project who you think they are and then treat them that way. Everything becomes a kind of profound, revelation, even though it doesn't sound like it.
Yeah.
Rather than listening to lectures, you come to it yourself. But I went to a Christian monastery. I went to work at a refugee camp. You know, that humbled me. That was a totally compassionate experience. Somebody did call me and say his family, the uncle was burnt to death by the Taliban, and said, could I please help? Well, I don't know anybody who can help, but I made endless phone calls because I'm a refugee. And I did get him out. So that was fairly remarkable. Mm. I'm still working on his family. But it was suddenly, when you're called to an emergency, you realize how shallow your life is.
Yes. And there's such a great value in service, isn't there? You know, doing something for somebody else is often, you know, quite a good way.
An eye-opener.
Yeah, of getting out of yourself. Yeah. I'm interested that you don't like the term mindfulness. What would you replace it with? What's wrong with the term mindfulness?
Well, mindfulness sounds kind of like you're sitting on a gluten-free cushion with your eyes rolled back. It doesn't describe anything. But I think of it as an exercise for awareness. You know, people need awareness because we live in a time of, I always say, we're surrounded by weapons of mass distraction, and you need your attention. So I'd say it's an attentional exercise. It gives you the ability to focus when you want to focus, rather than spending 80% of your life mind wandering. Mm. Now you have the choice. You can still mind wander and you can still get carried away by those internal stories, but you can also pull back to what's happening right in front of you. So it's sort of a one-way ticket to the present. When you go on holiday, some people are still in the office, and so you wasted a lot of money. You are training your mind to pay attention, and they should train kids for that. So when teachers say pay attention, they know what they're talking about.
Do you think that we're at some kind of nadir in the world in terms of distraction and in terms of what those things, social media, constantly peering into other people's lives, is doing to our mental health? Is it something that we're passing through, or a kind of state that is here to stay?
Well, you know, Moore's Law, it's going to get faster and it's going to get more extreme. There's nothing we can do to stop it. Like when we picked up the spear, that was our first bit of technology. And then we learned to read, and that was, you know, and then we got the telephone. So the internet's not going anywhere. But what we have to learn is how to pull back from becoming a cyborg, partly technical. So all these exercises to remind you where the human ends and where the technology begins. So let's not kid ourselves. Tech is here to stay, but you can waste your life whining about it. You can go on TV shows or write articles going, my kids are doing this. Well, their kids are going to be doing it much faster.
Yeah. How would you advise a younger person to change themselves? Because it is absolutely true, backed up with statistics, that the mental health of our young people and our very young people is really poor at the moment. And you can't really expect kids to know how to deal with stuff, but the wisdom of older people can help them, can't it?
Yeah, but the wisdom, but we haven't got any wisdom either. You know, parents still shout at their kids. I shout at my kids. We lose our temper. We're on the telephone. So, you know, the way they teach attentional awareness in schools is the teachers have to learn it. And if the mother's going to pass her state on to the kids, she better learn how to cool her engines. Otherwise, you pass it to the kids. I mean, our only hope is changing the parent, or at least the parents can be calm enough to explain it to the kid. But if you give them pressure, the whole point of being a teenager is to rebel. So you're just giving them a reason to rebel.
How do you think you would have fared as, let's say, a 20-year-old young woman now?
Well, I'd still be 20. You know, you don't get into mindfulness until it becomes an emergency, really. I mean, kids really don't have time for it, because when you're young, you're supposed to put on the turbo, because we're developing an ego and we're developing an identity, and that's where you're going to make your success. But then around 40, the dissatisfaction starts to kick in. And sometimes when people have kids, they want their kids to be the success that they never were. I would have been just as ambitious, but my parents were insane. So I might not have run that far, and I might have been a real success in high school. Part of the reason I ended up an actress is I couldn't concentrate in school because there was too much violence at home.
Yeah.
So I missed a lot. And so maybe I went into show business to get back at everybody. And maybe that's a good thing. But maybe now when I study neuroscience, I think, whoa, is this interesting? So maybe I would have cottoned down to it earlier.
Yep. Some of your earlier stuff I absolutely loved, which is not to say that I don't like the stuff you're doing now, Ruby, but you were hugely right. influential when I was a young woman, actually. And I really, really loved your interviews because, you know, you just had absolutely no fear and it was wonderful to watch. Can you just relive for us some of the moments with Donald Trump? Because I think there's something really relevant, actually, to talk about now, so many years down the line. But can you tell us about that interview with him way back in 2000?
Well, it was a terrible interview because he got to me. And he, you know, when you're not conscious, when you're not aware, I didn't know then, but he reminded me of my dad who used to belittle me. And I would start to become the idiot he thought I was. I think now, because I'm a little bit, you know, I'm a little bit wiser about not letting people project who they think you are on you and really, you know, doing some exercises to get your cortisol down, it would have been a better interview. That was just with him. And part of it is, oh, people say, well, it's still good. It is still good, but I felt kind of toxic for a few weeks. You know, if you let them enter you, you know, their state, and his state was violent and vicious and woman-hating, you'll catch it.
Yeah.
I do have a way now of getting up a fence. But then there were love affairs like Carrie Fisher and Bette Midler and Tom Hanks, where you're just in love. And so that becomes like you're playing tennis with a pro. So most of the people were fun. Imelda Marcos was fun. You know, she was crazy. A little crazy, but at least I was playful with her. With Donald, I wasn't playful. With Bill Cosby, who tried to choke me in the first 5 minutes, I wasn't playful. I was scared. And I think now I wouldn't be so scared. But I did have a lot of nerve. I wasn't scared of people until they laid that viciousness on me. Then I get scared.
So when you saw Donald Trump emerge as a politician, and now when you watch him, what do you think of him as, you know, one of the few people who can actually say, you know, I've been in the room with him, felt threatened by him.
I know why he's like Hitler. You know, he's so full of anger that people, you know, people go blank in front of him and think, oh, maybe that's power. But it's not power. It's craziness. You know how when you get near, well, you don't, but I've been near people in prison, some of them, or in a institution, they're so crazy that your mind jumbles and you can't really hear what they're saying, but their fear is past you. I think a lot of times you think that must be power. I should give him more. So I think he jumbles people's brains.
Yeah. Didn't he do something so misogynistic? Didn't he talk about what
he talked
he'd
about
like
what
to
he
do
liked to
women.
Do with women, but yeah. I didn't have my sound on. Because in those days you couldn't do sound without film. But you know, he was trying to shock me, but I shocked him right back. You know, I became as misogynistic as he was just to play with him. And then he started to like me. Because as soon as he realized I wasn't a female and, you know, I wasn't trying to sleep with him, then I was one of the boys. I figured him out, but I figured him out late in the show.
It's so interesting that you immediately say, you know, there's a form of madness there. Because I think if you look at quite a few of the strong men of the world at the moment, if you took away their power and they had to live on civilian street like the rest of us, we would identify them as being mentally unwell, wouldn't we?
Well, there's been programs of top psychiatrists saying, giving their diagnosis on what's wrong with Donald. But it's like we have an amputee running the place and nobody's acknowledged that he's missing a leg. I mean, that's a prime example of narcissism. And yet people don't recognize it. It's unbelievable. But, you know, there's been Stalins before and there have been other crazy people. This isn't the first.
Do you think it will ever change?
I think if we're stupid enough to vote for him, then there's no telling how much lower we can go.
Do you think that there might be something in the more open conversations we have actually about mental illness and about personality disorders?
If we can't catch it now, what are you going to tell somebody in one of those states, you know, where they think he's a hero, he's got mental illness? They would, you know, you're using violence against violence. They wouldn't understand what you mean. Mm. You know, stupidity comes into the picture. To understand pathology takes a certain amount of brains. They would say, what are you crazy? He's very powerful. He's very powerful because he makes you angry. You know, it's like rabble rousing. I'm so ashamed of my country. I can't even speak of it. Let's bring back Sarah Palin.
Okay, let's. Are you hopeful for this country, your adopted country, Ruby?
Well, I think, it, you know, the people that are running have been educated. So you're just deciding between, you know, they think they're evil. Boris was nuts, but he wasn't nuts in the way that Trump is. But until we get into parliament where they just bray at each other like animals, I think politics are pretty civilized here.
Well, the comparison is probably valid. I really enjoyed talking to Ruby. Just to say that her tour, I'm Not As Well As I Thought I Was, is up and running. Tickets are on sale now. Just use that sentence as your search tool. And the paperback of her memoir of the same name is out on the 4th of April. And I'm sorry that we couldn't talk to Ruby for longer, actually, but we have one of those kind of slight tech-related interview situations. Okay. So we had to make way
for... We don't need too much information.
For you, actually, because you had a prereq in at 1:30.
Yes, our lives, busy. Our lives are so dizzying, but fascinating at the same time.
But I think there's so much more to talk about, actually, just on that point of who we are electing and who we're choosing to be represented by, because history's going to judge this episode of American politics very badly indeed. Mm. And people are drawn to the madness, aren't they? Of someone who patently lies, who exaggerates his own importance, who is misogynistic, sexist, and probably worse. And how's that going to look good in the rearview mirror of history, Jane?
Well, if there is one. Anyway, sorry, that's another apocalyptic note. We must all hope for better things. Okay. Let's hope we'll all live long enough to put up a statue of Jane Austen in Winchester. Okay, that's all I ask.
No, let's live long enough to put up a statue of Ruby Wax.
And Ruby Wax.
Somewhere in central London. Because I think, people like her are saying far more relevant things than many of the pompous what's-its who are being elected. And the good news tomorrow is that we will be bringing you excerpts from Beefy Botham's book, because Jane brought it in today.
Well, hang on. I don't know whether it's really going to stretch to more to extracts tomorrow. Hang on a sec.
We don't have time for extracts today.
We don't have time for extracts.
I was itching for a chance to get on the field and prove...
why don't we just leave it there? I was itching.
Yes, probably Plutarch's old trouble. Right, thank you very much for listening.
Have you been in a bath with a woman?
You filthy wretch. Jane and Fee at times.radio. Goodbye. You did it. Elite listener status for you for getting through another half hour or so of our whimsical ramblings, otherwise known as the hugely successful podcast Off Air with Jane Garvey and Fee Glover.
We missed the modesty class. Our Times Radio producer is Rosie Cutler, the podcast executive producer. It's a man, it's Henry Tribe.
Yeah, he's an executive. Now, if you want even more, and let's face it, who wouldn't, then stick Times Radio on at 3 o'clock Monday until Thursday every week, and you can hear our take on the big news stories of the day, as well as a genuinely interesting mix of brilliant and entertaining guests on all sorts of subjects.
Thank you for bearing with us, and we hope you can join us again on Off Air very soon.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.